Welcome to the Serious TV Drama Podcast. I'm Scott, and I'm being joined tonight, once again, not by Dan. Sorry, girls. that might have been one of the people who are Dan's fans. Oh, actually, again, we are being joined by Brian.
Hey, Scott.
How you doing, Brian?
Good. How you doing?
Doing okay. Say hi to your son. So we are here tonight to discuss, I guess one would call it the penultimate episode.
Penultimate.
And hopefully I pronounce it.
Okay. And I'm going to move so that my son doesn't make continued appearances on the podcast.
Well, anyone who's actually listened to our podcast over the last, good Lord, we've already passed 4 years doing this thing. We've had everything from cats, dogs in the house, dogs, you know, from the neighbors. The running gag on the comic book one was someone always seemed to be recording near their grandfather clock that will always chime at midnight, so you always knew what time it was if you were paying attention on the podcast. One of those Easter eggs probably people didn't notice, but I think we mentioned it from time to time. Anyway, so yeah, we are here to talk about the next to last episode of Legion, Chapter 18. I don't really have much to say about the previous episode, so I think we might just get right down to it, although I imagine we're going to be talking about the show overall before the night is out. So, should we just get started?
Let's get started.
All right, so let's get started talking about chapter 18 of Legion. Now, I know, I wouldn't say I've necessarily complained that much about it, maybe once in one episode. But I know that some people might have complained that not enough has been happening on Legion from time to time. It seems to be running in place. You can't say that about this episode. There were certainly a lot of things happening.
a whole lot.
A whole lot of things happening. So, as much as one can nutshell an episode of Legion, basically it's still, this episode is about all about, you know, closing in on the body of Farouk, but David is obviously distracted by the disappearance of Sid, so he ends up finding Oliver and torturing him to find out where Sid is. We happen to know that Sid's been taken down a gigantic, well, I guess a drain in the middle of, you know, what's the desert called again? Is it De Soleil, I think it's called?
I believe that's right, De Soleil.
Yeah, which is more than just a simple desert, as I think I've come to realize over the last couple episodes. It's kind of, I think it's as much a weird, almost other plane of existence place, much like the White Plains and all the other things. Not to be confused with White Plains in New York. Anyway, while that's happening, we see that Sid is hanging out, and much to her chagrin, with Melanie, who is basically going off on a men's suck kick, and one sooner or later realizes, oh, that's not simply Melanie, that's Farouk doing the Melanie Vessel thing here, showing Sid that David is actually not such a great guy, and in fact, he is the villain of the piece. Meanwhile, we also see different members of Division 3 showing up and encountering different things in the desert, which we'll talk about. And finally, someone gets to the body, and yes, it is Farouk who does get his body back. And by the end of this episode, if there had been any lingering doubts about where David's character was going, I think those doubts are really quickly dissipating at this point. It's really hard to get away from the force that's been driving this season and David to turn from hero to villain for the overall universe here. So that's kind of a very slipshod, nutshell look at the episode. So now we can dive in and talk about all the different aspects of it. Everything from the specific details to the overall themes and what we liked or didn't like and what we thought the hell they were doing at certain times in the episode. So we can try doing it somewhat chronologically, but we can bounce around as well, because, hell, Legion bounces around. Why can't we?
So yeah, I was going to start. I thought the interesting, and I kept on listening, interesting is maybe the most overused word in podcasting, so I'm trying to limit my use of the word interesting.
That's my overused word.
Yeah, I noticed it in listening to audio myself. But they spent some money on this episode, because we hear both a Radiohead song and the Jane's Addiction song later, which I thought both were used to good effect. And the show usually does a pretty good job with music, as we've talked about before. And the first thing that struck me was the oddness of the scene outside the tent with the drain and the bunny, the bunny hopping around, which I thought was a unique way to open it, that she walks out. Of course, we start with David on the throne at a crystal ball looking at Sid, which is then flipped on its head as Sid watches him throughout the episode.
Right. The very intro of the episode, where you have David in that odd outfit and with the high hair and the crystal ball and everything on the throne of bones. As I understand it, that's actually as close to accurate a representation as they've gotten on the show for what that character has appeared as in the comic books. So if one was to pick up, I think it's a comic book Legacy, which deals with the character Legion, which is, David. That's kind of how he looks, except I think his hair might be a bit bigger in the comics from what I understand. But so that was, for whatever number of people who are watching the show that are actually familiar, that are very familiar with the comics, I am actually not one of them for a change. One can say that was fan service. So it was one of those things, I just thought it was just weird and surreal when I first saw it. Then when I was reading about the episode afterwards, like, oh, okay, cool. It reminded me of like when I was watching, say like the Luke Cage show on Netflix, and there's a brief moment where you see him, you see an outfit or a thing that, that resembles, excuse me. Wow, where'd that come from? That resembles what the character looked like outfit-wise back in the 70s with the big yellow shirt and the fro and everything. And again, that was them paying, fan service for the comic book geeks and such. Anyway, go on. That's a nice little moment, because one wonders, is that like a glimpse of the future kind of a thing or not? With this show, you're not really clear if that's what they're doing, or it seemed almost like it was a dream of Sid's for a second there. I wasn't crystal clear about that. I felt this, it was more a vision of potentially things to come is the way I looked at it.
I took it as David in the future, much the way we see Sid in the future. I took it to be that.
That makes perfect sense. Except he's not in a purple room, at least. The bunny. Were you disturbed at all that the bunny had a hook in it?
Yes, I was very disturbed.
I also, and speaking of that, and an image that we see constantly throughout the episode, I thought it was at least somewhat amusing, the fact that you have this gigantic hole, and obviously you have the drain stopper there. With a gigantic oversized version of like the little beaded chain and the little plastic stopper. I just thought it was interesting that so many people see it and no one comments on it. No one's not even like, well, that's strange. Although I guess they're used to seeing really strange things, so why not? But it's kind of like, the reverse of Honey, I Shrunk, the bathroom sink or something. But, So then, Sid encounters that hole, and then she's yanked down the hole. And then so one of the things we see for most of the episode is her and Melanie. And you and I have been talking about the Melanie situation this season and as of the last few episodes and just in general. This was interesting because it was kind of like one of those on one hand, but on the other hand situations. It's like on one hand, we get to see Jean Smart, the actress, really get a lot of screen time and really, you know, do something, you know, kind of interesting or, oh, see, I just said it. There we go. Interesting. Well, just doing something more than being in a daze or just spouting gobbledygook. Like they really gave her something to sink her teeth into. But then you get concerned about the character and what they're doing here, and which I think can also, if we want, can also lead to just a general conversation about maybe one could say missteps of the season overall. So since we've been talking about that, we were wondering what stuff was going to be with Melanie going into this episode. What was your take on it? How did you read it?
I thought that Melanie was portrayed stronger, which I liked, but it still was the realization of her being a puppet. And there was actually a thing, and I don't know if you remember it, where she talks about Oliver in love, and then Sid says, okay, I get it, Oliver left and you're pissed and I'm sick of talking about it.
Yes.
Which I almost like wondered, was that a sly wink to the audience? I don't know that it was, but I thought, like, to me, yeah, I'm a little tired of this version of Melanie and the way it went on. Now, of course, it being Farouk, it was different, but I still feel sad that Melanie's arc ended in her traveling away with Oliver just to sort of be a diversion to distract, and also another vessel in which Farouk could be to trick David, because Farouk wasn't in Oliver, he was in Melanie.
Right.
So I thought it was a good vehicle for the actor, not a great vehicle for the character.
Yeah. It was interesting because at a certain, I won't say that I knew from the get-go that Melanie was really Farouk at this point. That thought didn't occur to me initially. Although based on the previous episode, maybe it should have. Maybe I forgot. I don't know. So I will confess that I was getting really frustrated and impatient with it, at least for the first, I don't know, several minutes, first third, maybe even third of the episode with her.
Can I interject and ask a question?
Sure.
If that is the case, I'm just curious, did you wonder then how she was manipulating the time pools and the viewing things and wonder, oh, is this a power Melanie had?
Yeah, I was trying to, because part of me was wondering if this was reality at all. And I wasn't, it just, for some reason, my mind didn't go to it being a Farouk thing, even though I guess it should have. I'm still wondering if there is anything to Melanie beyond, she has to have something, because she was the leader of them. It doesn't make sense otherwise. I guess I could Google that. But I really try not to do that with the show too much. I kind of like try to go into, I mean, I read a little bit here and there. There's certain people who talk about the show that I enjoy reading what they have to say about it. I try not to mirror what they say, although sometimes we are in sync, so it just comes out that way. But yeah, although those, I thought it was funny, all those little pools of visions reminded me of what they call the pensive from the Harry Potter movies, and the Harry Potter books first, and then the movies were actually visualized, where it's very similar to that. It's, you know, this little shallow, what seems to be like a shallow pool of liquid, but then when it swirls around, you look into it and you see a vision of what's either happening, or either be the past or the future or whatever. It looks like it was a whole bunch of, I thought all the Harry Potter fans were like, oh, look, it's a room full of pensives. What the hell's going on here?
Yeah, I think those are the pools that they pulled memories out of and swirled, and you could watch those.
Right. And again, what you said about Melanie, I'm pretty much lockstep there with you. And one of the unfortunate things about this, because number one, you've got the Melanie character. And as a result, she's been a character who's either been sidelined and just been kind of in this weird daze for most of the season. And when they do decide to really utilize her, more than like that, the occasional oddball conversation, she's basically, a manipulated puppet for Farouk. And how she's being used, specifically in this episode, if you really want to take it there, it's like, and then using that character to essentially just kind of, I guess, almost mentally torture another female character on the show, who basically, almost victimizing her practically throughout the whole scene. It was making me a little uncomfortable, but not for the right reasons.
It did, and it went on, in my estimation, way too long.
Yeah, it was. I felt like, okay, you've shown her David's leering face, while he's drilling through Oliver or doing this, that, or the other thing, enough times already. We get it. Part of me was personally thinking I didn't really think she was making that convincing an argument at times, but Sid seems to be in a place where I think she's a bit more susceptible than she normally would be. I think she, because she's there, she already has questions. She already has issues, which we saw with her conversation with Clark and throughout the season, because of her concern, like even her concerns about future Sid. And then she shows her the vision of, I guess, David kissing future Sid or something. But again, personally, I don't think it should be that big a deal. Oh, he's kissing a future version of you. Jeez.
Right. he stayed with you. Yeah. He's loyal to you.
Yeah, no offense. They didn't, as far as I can tell, I don't think they had sex. I think it was just a kiss. So, come on. But maybe that's the guy in me talking. I don't know. But, I knew why they were doing this. I understood that they need to do this because they need to essentially turn Sid against David. And she's already kind of wavering to begin with. They need to have Sid think of him that way, because I'm pretty sure it's going to be playing a major part in the finale and the future of the show, quite frankly. I guess I just wish there had been a different way to go about it, and that didn't basically misuse certain characters. And quite frankly, the stuff that Melanie was saying overall has become tiresome.
It's been repetitive.
It's been really repetitive.
So much so that we're being repetitive talking about it, because mm-hmm. it continues on and on. And the thing I think that worked is you see Sid has doubts, and David has allowed her to have doubts. He's not been completely transparent with her. She knows something's up. It would have been much better for Melanie's character to let Sid see something or discover it and have more of a personal epiphany than to narrate the entire thing. Yeah. I think the narration was a bit much in the beginning of this episode. It got really old. Mm-hmm. And like you, I think even the longer it went on, the less convincing it was to me.
Yeah. Especially when one realizes this is Farouk speaking, so it's his view, and it's him choosing these words and whatever, and it just becomes almost, at a certain point, it becomes rather, what's the word, not cliche, but it's almost like it's mocking that kind of feminist perspective, because it's so over the top. And again, that becomes one of the things about the season. Like, it's like, is this okay that they did this or not? I don't know. Again, I don't want any creator or any writer to feel, they need to be concerned about ever being, quote unquote, politically correct or having to accede too much to whatever is going on, you know, in the real world. But I feel Noah Hawley, as I said in a previous podcast, so again, I'm being repetitive now, especially with this season, maybe a little bit of last season, and the last season of Fargo, he has definitely let what's going on in the real world influence his work and his commentaries. And I think it's become very hit or miss for him. I think it works up to a point, but he's been lacking a certain amount of subtlety, which I find surprising because I think he's an extraordinarily talented writer, and I just think he could do better than what he's been doing.
Yeah, I feel the same way, and I think the real shame of it, and what you and I probably are feeling, is it's not necessarily I hate everything that happened, but to see these two great actors that we've loved in this scene was really wasted with almost Bond-like villain exposition that didn't really need to be there.
Right.
You know, Jean Smart does the absolute best with the material she has, and it's good to see her not be high and, you know, out of it. But then the cruel irony of it is it's not really her, you know. It's not really Melanie.
Right. And it makes you wonder what that, I mean, like, I couldn't tell you what that character's trajectory is going to be now. And especially now that they have announced there's going to be a third season of Legion. And presumably, although Farouk used her body, I didn't get the impression that she's dead. I just assumed he just went from her body and then switched to his own. I mean, I hope that's what happened. But
I would assume she's alive because if he had inhabited Oliver, Oliver was still alive.
So. Right, exactly. There's been no indication that him using a body means, you know, the person is dead. So, but then again, there doesn't seem to be any set rules for any of this on the show, which is one of those surreal things about Legion where you just have to go along with it and not question it because they just don't feel the need to explain things. And most of the time, I don't mind that. I'm like, okay, that's fine. I get it. You know, we can move on. Kind of a thing.
Right.
And it's one of those things where you wonder if could they have gone about this a different way. Like, for example, another character that was been sidelined tremendously this season, and even in the first season, quite frankly, it was the guy, Tanami. You wonder if maybe they could have used him for something like this. Mm-hmm. Especially because he is the character who's known for being able to dip into memories and showing he can remember. It might have made more sense to a certain degree. And then you could have found a different way to utilize Melanie. I don't know. But then, again, I guess there's no getting around the unpleasantness of it. And I don't mind something being unpleasant because, you know, any number of great TV shows, movies, whatever, there may be scenes where, you know, a beloved character or not, and you have to sit through them being kind of, you know, if not just physically or mentally, in this case, mentally tortured by somebody. And you just feel horrible. But that works for, you know, it's drama, you know. Unless it's just done to such an extent where it's like, okay, enough already, like Theon in Game of Thrones or something, like, enough already, we got it. All the entire season of him being tortured, enough.
we get it. Ramsay Bolton's a bad guy.
Yeah, we get it. And he's got no balls, right? Got it.
I like your idea of Tanami because if we, and you know, really, he's somebody that disappeared, you know, in a way, and maybe we'll see him. I suspect we will in the finale. But you know, the idea of him sort of plugging into the mainframe, mm-hmm. which we saw,
right?
You know, and in the room he's in, there are all those intricate ones and zeros. It would have maybe been more interesting to show Tanami plugged into the mainframe somehow getting data information to Sid that was, you know, coldly reported, detached, that she herself could view and see, and then say, like, David's really going over the line here.
Right. And hopefully they do have some plan. I mean, I don't know, but hopefully they do have some plan for him to figure in some way in what happens in the final episode. Because otherwise, his character trajectory this season was, guy gets a thing in his ear, you know, basically under control, then thing hatches, he dies, goes into the mainframe, and gives David one piece of information, and that's it.
Yeah, he basically got John Hurted this season. He was, you know, he had the full alien exchange and then was carried by the Vermillion to the mainframe and hacked in that one thing and has sort of been missing. Now, that's not to say, I think one thing I liked about this week's episode is they did move all the pieces on the board this episode.
Right.
And was in some of them in really interesting ways. And I like that we see from this, we go to David and Oliver, and it was nice to see Oliver a little different and realizing as you see David getting more, I don't want to say mad, but getting, you know, more unhinged, that you do start questioning Oliver's not acting like he has been. And you start to wonder, if you hadn't yet figured out it was Farouk, that, you know, what's going on here with Oliver, which ultimately we find out, you know.
Right. Probably the first hint that Oliver was actually Oliver should have been, for me and for anyone else watching, I would say the first time he screams by having the drill go through him.
Yeah.
Because I feel like if Farouk had been in the butt, whatever, that would not have happened. Or he would have done that and then would have laughed. Or you know what I mean? Something which would have been the villainous cliche, but it's what I would have expected. The fact that he seemed to actually be feeling pain in the way I was like, that's strange. Which, of course, then obviously makes the whole what ends up happening so much more horrific, that he's basically been torturing Oliver, he was in a situation where Oliver was forced to do what he did, but he wasn't the vessel for Farouk at that point. But he still was under Farouk's sway, where he couldn't do anything differently for the most part up until the very end of it.
Right, which I think is. What the way you said that is precisely really what David sort of was in season one, and which is why I made sense of where he says, I'm part of you or I'm like you. And then when David punches him, he sees himself.
Yes.
Because really Oliver is a lot like David when Farouk would take over David and do stuff, but David would come back. That's really the same sort of boat Oliver's in at that very moment.
Right. And it's interesting watching, what's the actor's name? Also, I'm drawing a blank. David. Dan.
Oh.
Wow. Doing a podcast about the show for two seasons, and I've suddenly forgotten the main actor's name.
I would give you an assist, but I'm blanking too.
It's damn. Anyway, it doesn't matter. It'll come to me in a few minutes, I'm sure. But it's interesting to watch what he's been doing with his performance and as that character's trajectory has gone, and how you really can see the darkness in him, and because as he continues to torture Oliver, it seems to be more, it becomes just the violence of it. And of course, this is what Melanie is showing Sid at the same time. But you don't get the sense of the desperation of wondering where Sid is anymore. It becomes purely about the torture and the power that he has in the situation and inflicting harm. It's not very heroic.
You know? No, it's not. And I mean,
Even when Jack Bauer would be torturing someone in 24, you know, he never looked like he was enjoying it. Whereas David kind of looked like he was enjoying it a couple times, which is what they were focusing on to try to sway Sid there.
So do you think that as Sid's watching this, the whole metaphor of the drain is really like their relationship going down the drain?
God, I hope. I would hope that would be the metaphor they were going for there. But it could be. Dan Stevens is his name. Just hit it.
Yeah,
Dan
that's
Stevens.
Right. That's
Dan
right.
Stevens. I knew it was Dan. I just was forgetting his. Like, he's, yeah, one of those two name guys. Dan Stevens. Anyway.
Well, you had a head start. I mean, Dan's in the name of the podcast, so.
Right. And if he had been here, it would have been easier for me to remember. So.
Yes.
Stupid jerk. Anyway. I like that they would, again, being Legion and also, I guess, also being indicative of David's limitless abilities. It wasn't simply just, I'm going to take this drill and, like, drill through your... I couldn't figure out at first if he was drilling through his legs or he was going for his kneecaps. Because when they did the overhead shot, it looked like the blood was, like, in his leg, but not where his kneecap would be. But I think that's what you do, that's where you go for. You drill the kneecaps. I think that's what he was doing. I don't know. I don't have no idea. But
he was drilling substantial. I mean, it was, and I was kind of surprised. I was kind of surprised that he did it and continued to do it. And you and I have talked about how fast would his sort of shift to the dark side go, and they ramped up the speed of that to a speed I think you and I wondered if it would go this quickly, and it you really see him turning and getting into it, enjoying it, and really what I think's weird is taking his time when you know if he just wants to get to Sid. He's really sort of taking his time and relishing it.
Right. And also, of course, they have to get wacky with the visuals because he keeps appearing in different places with him in the chair. Like, listen, they're in the middle of traffic somewhere, or they're in the middle of this place or that place, whatever. Which was an interesting idea. I was like, hey, is he actually transporting them to different places? It's like, wow, he's got amazing powers.
Change the background. Wow.
Right, exactly. So you've got that happening, and then by the end of it all, when the realization is hit that, you know, it was Oliver all along, and again going to the David's transformation or his being lulled to the dark side, How sorry did you get the impression he was once he realized that?
I got the impression he was sorry. And I think that you see towards the end when he talks to scientist Carrie that there's a piece of him that realizes, you know, what's going on. But there's also a piece of him that's sort of resigned to it. That's where it's headed.
Right.
And I did get the sense that when Oliver hit the floor and fell out of the chair, that he was genuinely surprised by that.
Yes. I definitely remember the shocker surprise there. I think it was just one of those things where I was like, but and not really doing much else beyond that to help him or do anything about it. He just kind of slumps over, and that's when Carrie comes in. He's on the opposite side of the room, and he talks, and that's when he faces, he says, he admits to that he kind of enjoyed it. I don't remember the exact words he uses, but he felt good doing what he was doing.
Yeah.
So, which again becomes a very troubling notion. But again, they've kind of cleared the trajectory for several episodes now that this is a revenge thing. You know, it's almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy. If Farouk doesn't essentially kill David's sister, does any of this happen? I don't think so. Because that wasn't the path he was on. Because up until that happens, he's on the future Sid-led path of you've got to help him because you're going to need him in the future now. And without realizing that, well, yeah, he's going to kill your sister, and now you're going to be, you know, hell-bent on revenge. So, I don't know. I don't even know where I was going with that.
No, I know what you're saying. I mean, Amy's sort of been the catalyst for his switch, and that's led to where we are.
Right.
And I think that the scene really was geared towards seeing David lose control without really doing something. I don't want to say terrible, because obviously torture is bad, but you didn't really see him exert his evil side through a big show of power.
Right. That's where we're going.
But that's where we're headed. Right. Yes.
I mean, and that's what all the prophecies and the futures are telling us, that, you know, this is someone who may, you know, who's supposed to destroy the world or something close to it. I think that's what that little glimpse that we see in the very beginning is kind of a foretelling of as well. Again, it does make one very curious about if that's really where they're going with this. I'm actually become more curious about the third season than I am about the finale at this point, which is strange,
especially in light of the fact that the dampener. That you wondered what that would play, and they did later in the episode, and they dispatch with it so quickly.
Well, a lot of things in this episode seem to be, well, here's the plan, and oh, it's not going to work. Here's what we're setting out that it's not going to work. Like, it seemed like everyone had ideas of how they were going to go about things at the beginning of this episode, and things didn't work out for them, other than Farouk. I mean, he's the one guy who had a goal to accomplish, and he actually did it.
Well, there's one other person whose plan worked, and that's Lenny.
I guess, yeah, but her actions were so brief and limited in the episode. That's probably why I forgot about it. I mean, basically, she shows up to shoot a couple of people who are, you know, fighting with Carrie, and says, "Nah, I'm gonna wait here," and that's pretty much it for Lenny, right?
Yeah. Right, but she still has the gun.
Yeah, that's true. True, true. Okay.
So she's not been foiled yet.
Right. I guess.
But you have to admit, I mean, maybe the best thing in the episode was when she sat down, tried to meditate, and then said, "Do you know where a girl can find a monastery?" And the head, the body with the box on its head just points. I thought that was so silly and surreal that it really cracked me up. And Lenny is the only thing in this episode that's not super serious. And wasn't, you know,
am I mentally tripping right now? Wasn't that the previous episode?
No, that they replayed the scene of the car in this episode.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Wow. That's right.
And then she walks. You see, for that ended where she walks off. She walks over, and the people with the boxes on their heads are around the hall.
Right. Right. Yeah. You're absolutely right. I don't know why I was thinking that. Sorry. Wow. I just merged it to the previous episode. You're right. That was so. This is what happens when I go into doing a podcast scriptless for a change. I would have had that.
That's okay. And then she does the Doctor Who TARDIS, where the gun comes out of the case. And it's too big for the case.
Yeah.
And then she puts it back in the case.
Right.
And says, "Do you know where a girl can find a monastery?" And which I just.
Right.
Yeah. I thought was so surreal. And then at that point again, they took a shot that obviously shows that it looks like a stopper with the chain on it, you know, for a drain, mm-hmm. and pull out and show the hole. But she was minimal, but I love this.
I
scene.
Forgot about, no, I, you know, I'll even take back what I said, cause I totally forgot that was part of this episode. So Lenny had, then Lenny had more screen time than I was remembering. And so, yeah, you're right. Lenny was not subjected to the failures or the obstacles that, you know, that say encounter like the Loudermilks and Clark and David and Sid, you know, whatever, and everyone else essentially. Which again, it's the next to last episode. It makes sense that all the people that were supposed to be. Actually, this is actually a big question right now. I'm not. One of the hard things about this season is it's becoming hard and hard to know what and who to root for, and or what it is we're rooting for. I'm not as sure as I normally would be for this show. I mean, essentially, Farouk's been this, you know, this horrific evil parasite who's done, you know, unspeakable horrors for years, especially to David and world, whatever. And David's been, you know, our sad, tortured hero, whatever. But as the story is progressing and knowing where it's leading, it's like I still can't possibly root for Farouk, but it's kind of hard to root for David too right now. It's, mm-hmm. you know, and then it's like, oh, I guess I root for, I don't know, Sid. But then I have to have an episode of, you know, Sid being just being, you know, emotionally bludgeoned by Melanie for the entire episode, which was about as unfun as it gets. I'll wrap this up into my overall criticism of the season, you know, which we can talk about later. Oh, we can talk about it now. I don't care. I want to give Noah Hawley so much credit for really for a show that he was given pretty much free rein with to begin with, so he could be as, you know, freewheeling and as experimental as he saw fit with, as far as I can see, little to no limitations put on him. You know, kind of like the way we would talk about what Lynch did with Twin Peaks for Showtime last year to a certain degree. I think there are certain similarities, actually. So I want to applaud him for taking that and even going crazier this season to a certain degree. Or he took bigger risks, but the problem with taking big risks is, like, sometimes things don't work out. And I think that's why we're feeling, at least I think most people are feeling, this isn't quite the season the first season was. I think they're kind of, it's become a little bit harder a show to embrace as tightly as I did season one. I still really like it, but it's kind of, I realized personally that it shifted from the show I watch within a few minutes of it starting. And I would just watch it with, you know, and fast forward the commercials with the DVR, so I would be finished with, you know, to watch it then and there. I will confess, I've been waiting till the next day to watch Legion now. It's not, I haven't felt, because we talked about the lack of urgency I felt for the season. Well, that's also affected me as a viewer. So I haven't felt the immediate need to watch the episode as soon as possible. Like, say, when we were talking about The Americans, how we might have felt about that, especially in the last few episodes of that series. So, it's been bothering me. It's been bothering me.
I feel great empathy for David for what he's been through. And they do, you know, sort of use flashbacks to show when she's talking about, you know, about how he's been abused, seen horrible things, allude to all the things that have happened to him, including, you know, I think there's a disturbing image of, like, him as a little boy and, like, looks like a hand pats his face in a creepy way.
Yeah.
So I think certainly with David, you understand what the nature of what's going on with him. It's like Melanie says, he's both crazy and incredibly powerful. They're not, it's not one thing. It's really two things inside of him. Now, you know, you could argue that's obfuscation by
Farouk. The question is that true or not? And but we've been wondering about David from the get-go. I mean,
right.
I mean, the first season was kind of, a lot of it was about that. Is this a person who's actually crazy or not? Or has he just been led to, has he essentially been gaslighted his whole existence because they were trying to suppress his abilities because people were fearful of him? And one, I think the answer may very well be is like, kind of both. Because right. it's hard to have to have essentially limitless power, and also what he was subjected to as well. I don't think you can come out of that being unscathed. I think you are going to have some issues. I think you may need to speak to somebody.
You may need to go to a mental hospital and spend some time. I do think that of all the things we talked about last week, the things that jumped out to me were a lot of things we asked questions about and wondered about. Mm-hmm. This episode did a good job of moving it forward. Like, you know, we joked about, will we find out about the people with the boxes on their head? We did.
Right.
Will we see the Minotaur? We did. Will we find out about the body? We got to the body. The body was resolved. Clark got there. There was a lot of even the Carrie and Carrie thing moved forward, and we had moments of real dread and anticipation in this episode.
Carrie fighting the Bolo whip guys was kind of a neat little thing that did there. I love that they kept creeping out of there. Now, okay, because you mentioned about the guys at the boxing ring, are we supposed to think the guys who were coming out of the drain were the guys who had the boxes on their heads? Or are those different people entirely?
I assumed they were the same people. Because much they had the bolos much the right. same way when they threw them and wrapped around. That sort of seemed similar to the mechanism with which Sid was drawn down the drain.
So is there now, are these men, because they were put there, they're fighting, you know, Loudermilk and, you know, Division 3 as a whole. So are they actually human? Are these creatures, because they seem to be, essentially they're fighting on Farouk's behalf, because what else do you call them? They're not the monks from, you know, the Migo Order. At least I don't think they were, because no one said they were. And the other guy was supposed to be the last remaining one anyway. Wait a minute, maybe that is it. Maybe that's that they were supposed to be there to protect. They were supposed to be the last line of defense against the body. Meanwhile, Farouk's was able to get down there anyway.
I took it to be they were the last line of defense to protect the body of Farouk.
Yeah,
and he had either gotten past them or corrupted them.
Right, and yeah, that makes sense. Okay, I'm remembering it now. How many days? So let's see. What else do we have here? I feel like there's something else kind of significant.
There was something real significant that I wanted to bring up with you.
Go for it.
This is the episode where Farouk says to Sid that he is Legion, the World Killer.
Yes.
So the actual title of the show is uttered, which led me to believe his disintegration from good, loving David to scary, powerful, out of control David is probably more serious than not.
Yes. It's the first time the word Legion is said, and what that really is defined as for the show, like that Legion, i.e. would be the World Killer, which is a phrase I keep using on Supergirl. It's a phrase. Funny we're talking about it on Legion now. I thought that was a very interesting turn of events, and the fact that it's the title of the show. And if you really think about it, one can say that there was a plan for this from the get-go. If you even look at the imagery, like even the promotional imagery, way back for season 1, not just season 2, season 1, which, if you go look at it, all the images of David tend to have a certain either demonic look or, at the very least, a very troubling look. They're not images where it's like, oh, that's your protagonist. He's a good guy. It always looks like there's something off or wrong here. What's funny, I'll make a weird link to it. It's kind of like watching Better Call Saul.
Yeah.
Because we want, because of course that's being a show, a prequel to Breaking Bad. We already know that the character there is eventually going to become Saul Goodman, even though for the first three seasons he's still been Jimmy McGill. But you're watching over the seasons how his character is slowly, but inexorably, leading to become the Saul Goodman persona. And in a weird way, that's kind of what Legion's doing, where they kind of, I just think people didn't realize, including me, that, hey, by the way, the guy who you're rooting for, he might actually turn out to be the bad guy in the end of this. He might be your Walter White at the end of this, whatever. Which, again, makes me wonder about season three. More than I am wondering about the finale. But another weird thing about the season is, when one keeps track of entertainment news and whatever, the fact that they, several weeks ago, they had announced that they were adding an episode to this season. Now, I'm a little confused about this. I'll tell you why. Because that was one thing I was letting my eyes center on in anything I was reading about it this week. And the implication from different articles I read this week was that this episode would have originally been the finale, except there were significant changes that were made, or at least some changes that were made. And said we're going to get an episode next, so we have an extra episode next week. I maybe that's true. I would rather hear it from someone directly connected to the show as opposed to just, random writer guy. But maybe they know and I don't. They probably do. But it seems strange to me. Because it feels like if you had gotten that far in the season already, things like your finale would have all been sewn up already. So I almost find it kind of hard to believe. I keep thinking that maybe we just found out about the additional episode later than it actually happened. Because if you look at the season, I can imagine, hey, it would be a really great idea. Why don't we do an episode with just wacky alternate versions of David? And we'll just plant it right here. Because you can take that episode out of the season and it doesn't impact the season at all. Because it's very standalone. It doesn't have anything to do with the... It doesn't really connect to the overall plot other than just, hey, here's versions of what David might end up being if he goes a bad route, or one version of it. But other than that, it doesn't really connect to the season, at least as far as I can recall. So I'm very confused about that. And it's one of those things where I'll look forward to reading... Hopefully Noah Hawley will have an interview after the season's over, and I can just read what he has to say about it, and then I'll know for sure. But I'm very confused about that.
Yeah, I think it will be good to have a Sepinwall postmortem of this season, someone like him to interview Hawley and find out why the episode changed or what was needed to add the episode.
Right.
Because it was extraordinary from my standpoint, because this show isn't, the highest rated show in the world. It's interesting for them to agree to an extra show, because almost all episodes of Legion have to involve, cost of special effects and things, because there's a lot done, and it's done very artistically, very well. So I'm sure to lay out the extra money, there had to be a real compelling reason for that to happen.
Yeah.
The episode with David, the different Davids, I'm sure that probably could have been done cheaper than the other episodes, because it wasn't set in a continuous dreamlike world. It was set in the real world, but there was still some stuff in it.
But you have to realize also, but when you watch an episode like that one specifically, you've got all those different versions of it. which means you've got all these different settings. You've got
so and makeup.
You've got all the makeup. I'm sure the makeup's not cheap, but the idea of it, you have to shoot in various locations. Those both interior and exterior stuff. Various, sets had to be sets that were not seen or used in any other episodes, that had to be designed or used specifically for that episode. And rich guy's house, whether they had rent, maybe they found some, I'm sure they found someone's house. They didn't build it from scratch, but all those things cost money. That's another thing. When you're looking at budgetary issues and on TV shows, a couple things to look for. Obviously, as you mentioned, everything from music licensing to special effects, whatever. But I'll always say, look for how many locations are, because that's where the whole thing about television and the phrase bottle episode. Because the whole point about a bottle episode is that's a show. That's one of the two types of TV shows over the history of television that were done. The primary reason to do it was because it was a money issue. Even though sometimes you got some of your greatest creativity going with certain TV shows when they would do a bottle episode, but it was really a money issue, because they just couldn't. They just said, okay, this is how we'll save some money. We'll just have everything be in one location for the entire episode, whether it be it could be a sitcom and it all takes place in one room. It could be a drama and it all takes place in one room. That kind of a thing. And I won't go through a litany of examples, because we all know we can all think of them. It's either that or a clip show, which is the infamous thing. It's like, oh, it's a clip show.
The worst. Clip show's the worst.
Thankfully, television has moved away from that, greatly over the last 20, 30 years. But I mean, I remember The Simpsons used to take off on clip shows all the time, if I remember. So with an episode like that one, it's like there were a lot of significant different locations in it, if I'm remembering. So I don't know. I wouldn't necessarily say that one was cheaper to make, because even if a lot of your main cast wasn't in it, because it was very much a David-centric episode, but you had all these other people, and some of them were like even people I recognize, actors of some consequence, so you had to pay them too. So,
well, you've educated me on television, so now I know.
It's one of three or four things I know. That's about it. Although you wouldn't know that from the way I've been talking for the most part of this podcast. But let me think. I feel like fruit getting the body.
Yeah, there's a few things here that I wanted just to touch on with you and bring up.
I love the look. And again, we haven't spoken that much in this episode, this podcast, about the visuals of certain things. And I'm thinking about the things we need to talk about, like the fucking Minotaur. The first curse. Okay. But I love the shot and look of Farouk with the sun. And being silhouetted. I mean, it might have been the obvious shot to go for, but I still think it would look. It looked really great. I also love that the body I love the fact that the body has been kept in secret, buried in this little egg thing, and for eons or whatever. And the body's got the sunglasses on.
Yeah, it was a good touch.
Which makes no sense if you really think about it, but we'll let it go.
you mean the technological marvel of centuries old civilization that had sunglasses?
Exactly.
And rather stylish ones.
Quite.
I thought a few things about that scene. Farouk's coffin sort of being an egg.
Oh yeah.
Calls back to the PSA of the.
Oh,
the eggs and the delusions and
the egg has been probably the biggest visual metaphor throughout the season.
Yes,
and not only just visually, it's also been spoken about and referenced outside of the PSA on the show itself, which I'm just like, okay, they're really hitting the egg thing pretty hard this season. It's like, okay, yeah, you got it. Go on. All right. Go on.
And also, if you recall, Melanie's, when Tonami went inside her mind, she was at the center of a maze guarded by a Minotaur.
Yep.
And that's sort of how her fate ends in this episode.
Right.
She's at the very center of the maze where the body is, and he uses her as an instrument to set forth the Minotaur. And I thought I liked the way that she touched the Minotaur and it grew big, and she said, "Go forth and kill the weak."
Yeah, I was gonna. Well, you just said what your opinion of it. I'm kind of torn on the Minotaur. Because up until that moment, it was such an arresting visual and strange visual of what appeared to be a crippled Minotaur. And then she, i.e. Farouk, comes into contact with him, whatever, and that essentially transforms him into, well, a little bit more of your stock, oh, hey, creature of the week, whatever we've seen in a million things, whatever. It made the Minotaur a little less interesting to me as a result, as opposed to the Minotaur on crutches was very interesting, or whatever, or not crutches. Was it a walker?
It was like a cane or something like that. Okay,
whatever. He basically was crippled. And I know that I don't think we're ever going to get I don't think we're going to get a real explanation about the Minotaur. I'm not sure how I feel about that because we've seen this image a few times before this episode. We've seen the Minotaur at least in two previous episodes, maybe three. I'm forgetting how many right now. And it's obviously once Farouk comes in contact with him, it infuses the Minotaur with some sort of, you know, rejuvenation ability, whatever, and he goes to do his thing, which is much like Minotaurs do. You know, people are in a maze, and that he's the threat, except this is a Minotaur that can climb walls somehow. What was he before? Because it seemed like, on one hand, I thought he was linked to Melanie, as we saw in that previous thing. But now I'm not so clear about that. It's a slightly frustrating, confusing thing for me. And I usually let the confusing things go on this show because I just go with it. It's like, don't think about it too much. But that one kind of bothers me a little bit.
It's a bit of a mixed metaphor between Melanie's mind and when Tonami had to sort that out and the crossplay between that and Farouk. I didn't mind it. I liked it. And I think I liked it because it amped up the danger to the characters who went down there. And we had sort of like the Tomb Raider scene, which I really liked, of badass Carrie jumping down the hole and bouncing back and forth.
Yeah, I enjoyed that.
Which I thought was just a really cool visual. You know, if I had to pick an MVP this episode, her scene with Jane's addiction kicking butt. The only thing I didn't like was there, and I don't know if it was like a cheesy homage to 300 where she kicks the last one down the hole. Before they all climb up and then Lenny helps her. But I liked it after it was over because when the Minotaur grew big and then, you know, scientist Carrie was down in the hole, I started worrying about what we talked about last week and thinking, oh God, is that what's going to happen to scientist Carrie? And then we see he makes his way to David, obviously for the last part of the episode. And then I worried about Sid, and badass Carrie, and to the best of my memory, that wasn't finally resolved. In this episode. And so then I started wondering, is this where Sid loses her arm?
I thought about the arm thing there.
How is
Sid fighting the Minotaur and not switching bodies with him?
I don't know.
And why wouldn't you want to do that? That would be kind of cool.
But I guess the problem is once you switch, what do you do?
I don't know.
If you hit yourself back, like, you're screwed. Oh, you're stuck as a minotaur.
Well, then work that into like it keeps going back and forth or something. I don't know. I'm thinking more about the minotaur. So obviously a minotaur is something you associate with a labyrinth, a maze. And they've kind of touched on the maze thing. I think it was even in one of the PSA things as well, if I'm not mistaken, early, maybe in the first episode. So maybe, since this is all about Farouk's body, originally this creature, this minotaur, is there, that was supposed to be protecting the body.
That could be as well.
But the whole thing about it being kind of crippled is only maybe it's only supposed to be like, well, he's been there for a very long time, and they just had a little fun with it instead of just being the typical creature that nothing happens. They're like, oh, he's gotten old and infirmed, and Farouk kind of taints that creature by touching him and also infusing him with energy, but he kind of working against what the Minotaur is supposed to be there for, I think. I just kind of took that right out of my ass, pretty much, right there. But I'm trying to come up with an explanation.
I like that.
Because otherwise I have no idea what this Minotaur is. But that is like, well, Minotaur, maze, guarding something. That's what this is all about, the body. Oh, yeah, maybe it's kind of obvious. I just hadn't realized it. Maybe it's because I just kept associating specifically with Melanie, only because of the whole dream, not dream, the little mind trip that we went on inside her head that episode, and him appearing at the end of it. But maybe I kind of just associated the two of them a little bit more closely than I was supposed to.
No, I like that. I like that idea a lot, and it makes me think that if we think of the maze and the Minotaur, that if the egg is at the center that contains Farouk, navigation out of the maze means, birth, life, growth. It is really metaphorical to Farouk's, when Farouk escapes the maze in his body, he's now a fully formed person the way he was before.
Right. And actually connecting it to Melanie would be, because once upon a time, Melanie being the person in charge, in control, before she lost that, and so became associated with the Minotaur. So her being the one who encounters the Minotaur, so there's an association between those two, so he wouldn't attack her, not realizing it's actually Farouk, and then the whole touch, and now becomes one of his minions. I don't know.
If you want to get really wild, since we're just having fun, if Melanie's the leader of this band, as she was, and David turns out to need to be stopped, maybe by Melanie's transference to Farouk, maybe they'll end up helping him against David.
Yep. That could be where they end up going. Although I'm not too sure how thrilled Melanie is going to be knowing that she was a tool of Farouk's, but again, she's been vaping for a year. So,
Well, I have another interesting question. A little throwaway line, but I wonder what it means. And to me, it's when Lenny at the top of the hole says to Carrie says, "Should we go?" And Lenny says, "No, I'm just going to stay here and wait." And Carrie says, "Why?" And she says, "For the big payback."
Mm-hmm.
And in my mind, I took that to mean that she wants to kill Farouk for what he's done to her.
I believe that's the implication. Whether that's how it's going to end up, I don't think that's what's going to end up happening. But I think in her mind, that's what she's thinking.
That's how I took it to be.
Yeah.
That she's there to kill Farouk for what he did to her.
Yeah, I believe that's her motivation as well. It becomes another interesting thing about the season. It's like characters that we were used to like rooting against season one, like now we're kind of rooting for, like Lenny season one, the ultimate evil, because yes, she was Farouk, but whatever, still, you know what I mean. And now we're kind of rooting for her. Melanie was, you know, this episode alone, Melanie being someone that we were kind of on the side of in season one, now it's like, oh, she's horrible. Again, it's Farouk, but that's what the show does. So David's the only one that doesn't have that excuse anymore, or issues with David, and he's Farouk-less. So,
and I guess the last thing before we do the wrap up, if did you get the sense from scientist Carey as he talked to David that he was visibly horribly shaken by the David he encountered in that room?
Yes.
I did too.
Absolutely. I love Bill Irwin on this show, and then he even had some very subtle physical stuff that was very fun to watch. Like when he was when he's being dragged by by one of those minions earlier, he does some interesting footwork in one moment where it looks like he's like kind of a voice tripping. There's like a little, almost like a dance step to it. It's very strange. It's interesting because with Carrie, and I mean, I don't know if I may be the only one who thinks this. I don't know. It's because on one hand, he's the scientist among all of them. So he's the one who may be most predisposed to speaking in, you know, technological blah, 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 gobbledygook, you know, whatever. Let's fill up the script with some crap just to move to the next scene kind of stuff. But on the other hand, I find him to be the most human character on the show.
I totally agree. He is the... And I think when we say scientist, he is a scientist in that, in human reactions as well, he observes what's going on and takes note and studies what's happening, not in a detached way, but seems to think that through like he does with Badass Carrie and with Melanie. It is interesting. He's the technology guy, but he's the most connected to all the people around him in noticing what they're doing, what they're going through.
I think to a certain degree, one can make the case he's the most empathetic character.
I wouldn't argue that.
I mean, the closest you come to that is like you could say that about Sid to a certain degree, but I personally wouldn't, because Sid's become so, it's become so focused when it's about anything, it's David. Whereas, Carrie, it's about everybody.
Yeah. And to some degree, Sid has at times in the past not been willing to listen. Mm-hmm. I think that she sticks her head in the sand sometimes, understandably so. When tough questions are asked, scientist Carrie has always tried to figure out the tough stuff, tried to help David, put David in the chamber. He's not one to not try to figure out a solution or see a problem.
Right. I have a question. So do you think the giant tuning fork was basically just there as essentially a joke, since Farouk just basically hurls it, you know, miles away, it looks like? Or do you think they'll actually find a way to use it in the final episode?
It seemed so bizarre that when they hauled the things out, at first, in my head, I wasn't like, oh, it's a tuning fork. It made sense after watching the monks climb out of the hole and swing the things and create some sort of sound. Mm-hmm. That disabled the Division III guys, made them sick, and I don't know if they died or passed out.
No, I think I think that was puked. That wasn't like the guy's head exploding. So I think they just passed out. I don't think it killed them. But I could be wrong.
Well, I took it to mean it disabled them because it didn't. Although it affected Badass Carrie and the others, it didn't hurt them. And I don't know why it would kill one person but not another.
Right.
Because we're not aware of any superhuman immunity to sound in any of the characters. So,
the way I look at it, if Clark is there and they're not killing Clark, then I don't think anyone else can So I couldn't, there's no way to rationalize how, oh, all the soldiers will die, but Clark will be okay.
Right.
So that's why I think, I think it just incapacitated and knocked them out, made them sick, whatever, but I don't think that specifically killed anybody.
I think that the tuning fork won't have anything else to do with it. If it does, however, though, the person who would use it would probably be Scientist Carrie.
Well, only because now, I mean, because the whole idea that it's a dampener and would not knock out until the, for however long it rings for, and I get a tuning fork that big, I imagine that would, that note would last a pretty good solid amount of time. Where you could see it coming into play is like you'd use that now while Farouk is in his own body finally, then Farouk is just a man,
right?
And that, as is David. And quite frankly, if I was Clark, I'd say, haul ass, get that fork back. We want to rein that sucker. Kill both of them.
Yeah, if you're Clark, that's what you should do.
Clark might be the. I think I might be on Clark's side right now on this show. Because like, he's been. I think he's kind of right.
Yeah, and he's another one. You know, talking. I'm just thinking as you say that. He's another one we kind of flipped on this season. Yeah. When he had the great scene with Sid and
villain to hero again. It's the show has done that with several characters. So
do you think that you know the tuning fork is a Chekhov's gun, and the fact that we know what it does, that it comes into play in the finale?
I got a feeling it's not going to come into play because. For better or for worse, this season, there's a lot of things that one can... There's either things that are obvious that they did do or didn't do, and there's things they should have done that they did do or didn't do. And to have this whole build-up for that and then do nothing with it would be kind of silly. But I think that's almost the joke of the episode. You know, what I was talking about, like, you know, plans gone awry, whatever. And the fact, so it becomes, you know, we already have the ridiculous, exaggerated visual of the gigantic drain stopper, you know, so why not have a ridiculous, look, it's a giant tuning fork, you know, it's, you know, it's like something out of a 1950s Batman comic or something. So I don't think it will, only because then it becomes an obvious way to go about things. It's, oh, and now they're mortal, and then maybe they'll have a real wrestling match like they did in his mind in that episode or something. And maybe they'll make, you know, more homophobic remarks during it too as well. I'm wondering at this point, I mean, we ended, when season one ended essentially on a, you know, things were resolved, but then you had a couple big cliffhangers. You know, with Farouk leaving in Oliver's body, with Lenny beside him, and of course David being taken away in the little floating ball, whatever, or whatever the hell that thing was. I can't remember right now. Especially now that we know that they're getting a third season, I have every reason to think they're going to end on some sort of a cliffhanger-y like thing again. I gotta assume that the way they're going with the show that we're gonna end it with where, okay, I think David really is the bad guy now, and then it leaves you at the edge of what does that mean for the third season? And I've said, and here I'm being repetitive, great writing, great television is you write yourself into such a corner where someone says, well, how do you proceed from there? And you can think of any number of shows that, you know, like Lost used to do that sometimes. Like, oh, where do you go from here? You know, and other shows as well. And I'm hoping that they're going to do that. And I'm just hoping the show can just kind of just slightly refocus again better for the third season than what they've done so far this season. It's kind of like I admire the effort, but I think there's been so much that they could have, should have done, and they kind of wasted a lot of characters and time as well on the show. And I never said that about the first season. You know, I loved the first season. I don't love this season.
No, as we've said before, it's really good. It has great imagery. There's some great stuff in it. This season has been at times a little frustrating, yeah. And I believe in the final episode, if the arc we think the show is on is correct, they have to dispense with Farouk, and there has to be a new paradigm with David.
Yeah.
With David as the big bad or turning big bad in season three.
Which also, the one virtue of doing that is then perhaps it will help elevate other characters to more prominence and better usage. Like a Melody, whether he's in the mainframe or not, Tanami, whatever, maybe there'll be someone else introduced into the new season. Sid, of course. Although, yeah, Sid's going to be interesting. Yeah.
Could we see this episode end next week and there be a time jump?
Yes. I could very much see a time jump. And knowing this is a Noah Hawley show, he's been known to do that.
A time or two.
He's done a few time jumps, if I recall, on a couple of shows. So that, and again, that you know, no pun intended, that might save some time. So you know, they could have an entire season where they could jump forward a whole lot of ways, and then have an entire season where they're kind of telling the story backwards for all I care. That would be kind of neat, actually. Dear FX, I have an idea. I had one other idea that just kind of flew in and out of my brain. I can't think what it was. Oh well, I'm sure I'll think of it 5 minutes after we finish recording. I'm very much looking forward to the finale, and I'm kind of curious. I mean, do you think they would have to ultimately kill Farouk then?
I believe. I mean, the signs to me say yes. With the use of the word Legion being used in the ninth episode, in this episode, with Farouk getting his body, which has been the driving force of the whole season, with David's turn accelerated, and with the dampener removed, which, as we said, is a joke, but also, if you believe Farouk's own words, that David was the most dangerous person around.
Right.
That, you know, if anything, the dampener probably would help Farouk more than David. Mm-hmm. So I think that with all we've seen, I just don't see you continuing on an ongoing battle with Farouk and David into the next season.
Right.
Unless there was a dramatic shift where, you know, something happened and David, you know, accidentally killed or hurt one of his team. They then turn on him or Farouk does something to trick him to do something. And there are catastrophic consequences that either puts David out on his own or turns people against David. And it seems more likely from what we've seen, David's going to turn them against him on his own.
Right. Yeah. I believe that too. I think it's almost unavoidable. I would be very shocked if that isn't how that goes down as far as David is concerned. I'm curious. I mean, cause I'm leaning towards, I believe Farouk will meet his demise. But there is a part of me that keeps thinking, but it would be kind of interesting if they somehow do pull off. I'm just trying to see if there's any way you could really pull off, quote-unquote, Farouk being the hero in any way. Even when you see the idea brought to him, and like when they show the future Sid scene again and whatever, me see a bit more of that, it still doesn't seem to feel like it's really a realistic possibility. You know, it's You know, it's like, you know, it's like reading an old comic. You're like, oh, Joker's got to work with Batman. It's like, yeah, that's not going to work too well. It's just, and it'll work for a little while. It's always, yeah, very temporary.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't last more than that one issue. Usually, not even half the issue. So yeah, so totally looking forward to that. I know I had some other thoughts, and I can't think of them right now, so maybe there'll be something I can mention next week if I think of them between now and then. And Dan swears he'll be back recording with us for the finale, so we shall see. It'd be nice to, oh, it'd be kind of nice to have all three of us talking about it. That'll be a long one. Jesus. That's what she said. And that's really all I got, because, of course, I jinxed us before we started recording. I said, oh, we usually hour and shit, a little bit over an hour. That's our sweet spot for this. And, of course, we're hitting the hour and a half mark. So I've got nothing. You've got nothing, I'm assuming?
No, I'm good.
Good. Great. So if you thought this podcast was good, you'll probably think our Facebook page is great. So find us on Facebook at the Serious TV Drama Podcast. Like the page and join the conversation about shows like Legion and so many others. You can find us on iTunes the very same way. Go to iTunes, type in Serious TV Drama Podcast. You can subscribe to our feed as well as rate and review us. If you've had a few drinks and you actually like us, then rate and review us. Otherwise, don't. You can find us on Google in a million other places, I think, for some reason. I don't know why I've been saying that lately, but I just feel like saying it because I'm trying to get people to listen to the damn podcast. And finally, you can find us on the Twitter. Our handle there is at STVD Podcast. That's STVD as in Serious TV Drama Podcast. So, like I said, that's it for this week. We will be coming back at the end of next week for the Legion finale. There are some ideas being tossed around for the summer as far as our podcast is concerned. I know we sometimes take a little bit of a sabbatical, and we've kind of been decreasing our output a little bit here and there. Dan had an idea or two, which I haven't gotten back to him on. I don't want to say what it is just yet. It would be covering a show that's already finished its run and is currently on a streaming service. I just have to decide if I really want to watch it or not. I'm torn on it. I'm torn on it. I know that we technically do quote unquote owe some podcasts, and we'll just see if they happen or not. I'd like to do one finishing up all the comic book TV shows. Supergirl still has two more episodes to go, so that's why I feel it's okay that we haven't done it yet. We've never done Traveler season 2. Don't know if it's ever going to happen, even though we both watched it. We have yet to do Crown Season 2. I've got a few more episodes to go on that, so I'm actually closing on finishing it. I suspect Dan hasn't started it. I might call up Kimber and say, hey, you want to just do Crown Season 2 with me? And Dan can just edit it after. I don't know. So we'll see. It depends. It is the summer. You know, we like to be outside more than inside recording, I guess. I know Dan feels that way, that's for sure. I don't. I like to stay inside. All right. So again, Brian, thanks for doing the yeoman's work on this one. Your presence has made the podcast at least more worthwhile than it probably has been for a lot of times this season.
Well, thanks for having me, Scott.
All right. And with that, good night, Brian, and good night to everybody out there.
See you, everyone.